Ladies and gentlemen, this episode of Beat, Wine, and Shenanigans is brought to you by Speculative Fiction Academy. They'll teach you how to write. So, we have a little bit of a dilemma going on in this country right now, ladies and gentlemen. We've got people opposing critical race theory, which, you know, if you look through the BS, that's basically banning the teaching of Black history or American history, or more appropriately put, the history of America's racism. You've got just the destruction, or let's say the elimination of books in libraries. Anything that speaks to the Holocaust, anything that speaks to the to feminism, anything that speaks to the African-American experience is being pulled out of libraries and schools in certain conservative states. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Not only are people in the country going to be deprived of the voices of legends like Toni Morrison and Alice Walker, or more modern examples like, let's say, Victor Laveau, Linda Addison, our dear friend, and of course, lesser known writers like Mark Abbott, Kirk Johnson, and myself, Stephen Van Patten, will now find themselves banned in the USA now. Banned in the USA, writing about Black stuff in your book, and guess what? You're banned in the USA now. Anyway, gentlemen, please share your thoughts. Mark Abbott, take it away.
I'm not surprised. It's an amazing moment in time that we're moving into. Mm-hmm. I mean, to say we haven't been down this road before would not be true. I mean, there have been moments in history where certain books, because of the language or content, were banned. We're put on lists at schools that said, hey, we don't want our kids reading these particular books. Books then became abridged, mm-hmm, in certain, yeah, places in order for them, yeah, to be sold. And then books that the unabridged then shot up for hundreds of thousands of dollars because, you know, somebody felt not getting it because of the information, but just because of the value of it being a banned book or whatever. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is most of these books that are being banned, the people who are banning them have never read them.
Right.
Of course not.
Much like, and I'm not going to cheapen it to this, but I would say this is much like what we went through in the 80s with the MPAA with horror, where these parent groups were like, oh, we got to ban these horror films. I'm like, but have you seen it? You know, well, it's uber violent. But how do you know that? Because you've never seen it. So how are you banning something you've never seen? Mm-hmm. How do you ban something you've never read? You know, I mean, the whole situation with Maus, what was interesting was the author of the book had read the transcript from the school, from one of the things, and he said half of the stuff on there was the most ridiculous thing he ever heard.
Yeah.
There was one person complaining about nudity. He goes, there's one panel in there of somebody nude and a woman in a bathtub, and he goes, and you'd have to like literally put your face in the book to even see that she's naked. Mm. He goes, you actually took time out to look for that, you know. Mm-hmm. Is just speaks volumes. I do hope. I think my hope now kind of lies with the youth at this, mm-hmm, point. because this is old man racism. This isn't some new folk that just came walking along. Although there are some young people in that GOP party or in the conservatism who've fallen right into this trap, and they're going X, Y, and Z. But most of the young people who, what you're basically doing when you ban a book, and I don't think people realize this, when you ban a book, you know how bad people now want to see what it is that you banned? They will go out of state. They will cross lines. They will go on eBay. They will go on Etsy, wherever they need to go to get their hands on this, to now find out what it is that you don't want them knowing. I guess I can say thank you for bringing some of these titles to light, because now many of these books that none of us ever heard of are like, oh, okay, I need to go check this out. Mm-hmm. So you're helping, you're not hindering anything with your blind racism. Basically what you're doing is unless you're going to start doing some ignorant crap, like somebody comes to New York, buys a book, and then they go back home and then you won't come in their house and take it from them. I mean, ownership of these books, you know, you just want to keep them out of the hands of people who can readily get them, like at libraries and stuff like that. And we live in a different time now where information isn't, you can't hide information as readily as you think you can. You can ban the book, but if it's on Kindle, if it's on a torrent, somebody out there gonna get their hands on it,
right.
And it's gonna have new life. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just sad that we're coming down to this.
Yeah. We have regressed,
and you know, it's almost like, again, I say this all the time, I don't get it. I mean, I really don't get what the point of any of this is. I don't know what you think this is going to do. But right. Again, what always ends up happening is everybody that's involved in things like this, it's only a matter of time before they get to something you like and something you want, and they're going to snatch it from you. And then that's when it becomes unfair. But you know, that's how this thing moves. And
you know what? I wonder if this is actually just it's theater. It's theater for it's. I mean, they've banned Huckleberry Finn, right? Mm-hmm. To Kill a Mockingbird. They've banned those books. I think a lot of it really is just kind of like a ginning up of a fan base, of the political base. Because you have your primaries coming up. Mm. A lot of motherfuckers is coming in for the votes, right? I really do believe that's the real... Because, you know, book banning has never worked. Historically, it doesn't work. Because guess what? You ban it this year, next 2 years or a year after, they'll come back because there was such demand for it. As you said, Mark, it's the result.
Yeah.
Right? We're outraged at the act, and the result is very different. So ergo, we're doing this now for a particular purpose of ginning up our base,
right
even if the courts strike down the a lot of these states doing voter suppression,
right.
And it gets struck down later on, like maybe next year or even sometime this year, right? It still galvanized that few, that small group of people to vote. I mean, they're a small group. It's not the entire country. It's a small group. But if everybody in that small group votes, because not everybody in the large group is going to vote.
Well, the problem is, as far as voting in general goes, so with the whole thing with the Electoral College,
right?
you actually don't need the numbers to beat.
Well, I'm not talking for the presidency.
No, like
Senate and congressmen and stuff. Because I mean, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. the presidential thing is fucked already. It's been fucked because of the Electoral College.
Right.
Right. But when you come to the primaries, like who's going to be in the Senate House, who's going to be Congress, who's going to be judges, shit like that.
But
redistricting. Redistricting. Yeah, they actually, a lot of states have actually, getting rid of gerrymandering. Bring up a bill for gerrymandering, which is, yeah. And guess what? The fucking Democrats should have been doing that shit since the 70s. Right, but because a few of the, for lack of a better term, please forgive me, for the mansions and the cinemas, it was good for them, so they kept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right? We're not thinking about the entire party as a whole or the people as a whole. The other thing I want to bring up is I am now, this is going to be like a real heavy pushback for anybody who wants to talk shit about millennials. Because millennials ain't the one banning the books right now.
No, you're right.
No.
It's usually the generation of people complaining about millennials or the boomers from before mm-hmm. who are doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, like I there's this woman at my job who always like, oh, these fucking millennials, they, you know, can't take a joke. They're so privileged and they're so cry. And I was like, yeah, but they ain't the motherfuckers banning books.
And you know what? Not for nothing. And, right. and very much in the line of what you're saying there, Kirk. You know, like social, I'll put it to you like this. Socializing with millennials can be a little draining.
But then because they're young.
Exactly. And you because know, and that brings up, and of yeah. course, then that brings up the question, well, shouldn't your old ass be home anyway? But then it
I imagine you. Me, you, and Mark. We've hung out together, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Forgive my French, but us niggas would have drove. I know us niggas John drove our parents crazy. We've driven motherfuckers to drink. I know my dad has probably finished a whole thing of whiskey. You know why? Because his dumbass son drank all the beer in the fridge. And blamed it on a faulty level in the fridge and all the beers falling on the floor. That's what I told him. And he looked at me and says, all the beers falling on the floor, Kirk? I says, yes. Yeah. Is that why the floor is still dry? That's why the carpet in front of the refrigerator is dry? I mopped it up.
If the girl lost the blood, where did the blood go?
I'm just saying, it's nothing, it should be nothing new, but I think there's a certain point of, like, realization where, millennials are driving us crazy, but I got to forgive you for that.
Look, being that a millennial's too. Parent, I'm not, frankly, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Well, maybe my worst enemy, but, like, aside from all of that, all right, you know, and I'm just talking.
I didn't mean to go for tangent, yeah.
Yeah, now I'm not even talking about being one of their parents because, you know, I'm sure that might be hell on earth, depending on the millennial. I'm sure there's plenty of millennials that are straight arrows and you just don't hear about them unless they suddenly pop up on Jeopardy and they just fucking destroy everybody because they've had their nose in a book for the past 10 years.
Right.
You know, I'm not even talking about that. What I am going to talk about is millennials in the workplace. And yes. Because that's where I usually deal with them. And to be honest, that's a mixed bag. And while you get a little taste of the privilege and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you also can't knock the fact that those motherfuckers come to work and will not be spoken to in a certain kind of way. And you know what? Here's what Generation X, here's where we fucked up. And we fucked up because when we got into the workforce, we were working for mostly boomers.
Yeah.
And what are we used to from boomers? Pure, unadulterated, unfiltered fucking disrespect and abuse. So we got in the workplace.
Wait, unless you're a BBG.
Unless you're okay, fine. But outside of that, you got talked to all fucked up. Yeah. You had all kinds of sly racist shit said to you. If you look some kind of way, you got sexually harassed and didn't know what to do about it.
Yep. Yeah, I've seen that.
I used to watch people get abused to the point of crying. Mm-hmm. You do that to a millennial now?
Yeah.
You're
and good for them.
You're wrapped. You might as well just jump in a microwave. You know,
and good for them.
Done. And good exactly. for them. And exactly. Mm-hmm. And that good is, and I hate to say it, but that's some shit we didn't have the fucking balls to handle.
Now, I have to ask you this. Is it because we didn't have the balls to handle it, or we weren't brought up in that kind of way? Because there's a point where, we got tired of that shit and we just started doing independent shit like grunge and hip hop, right? And independent publishing is when that shit started coming out during Generation X years.
But all of that only benefited a small amount of people.
No, agreed. No, agreed. And it is what it is.
But we are the generation of parents who, when they got an opportunity and it carried them through to retirement, mm-hmm. it's because, you know what? I went to work. I did this. I did what my boss told me to do. Mm-hmm. And as long as you do that, I grew up on that whole thing of do your work, go to work, do what you're supposed to do, and you're going to move up. Mm-hmm. That's a fantasy that doesn't exist, because there's all these other components that we are not told about because again,
America.
I case in point, I love my father, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, he sent me a book called This Is Harlem. Yeah. And I read this thing from cover to cover. And I said to him, I was like, well, I don't understand something. Why didn't you tell me about this? Mm-hmm. Why is like when we have these conversations? And it was this kind of like, well, I didn't want you getting into arguments with people about this because people don't want to live. But I'm like, but why are you keeping information from? It's the same caveat.
Right.
I got that good city job. You know what a good city job is now? No job working for the city. You ain't gonna get no pension like my parents got. You're not gonna get no promotion like my parents got. All of that, but we were brought up sort of not without saying it straight to our face, but basically shut up and take it because it'll benefit you in the end.
Yeah.
It's only now because here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
What millennials have figured out is these folk, our generation,
full of shit.
They call our bluff.
Yeah.
They don't, if somebody says, I'm going to union. Okay, fine. Go to the union. Sit back and this, that, the other thing. Next thing you know, here come them and their union rep and a lawyer. And you're sitting there like, oh, wait a minute now. No, you told me this is exactly what I did. And and they're not afraid to lose their job. They're not afraid. We were brought up, oh, Christ almighty.
Yeah, we were fired. We were, I do remember that,
As you start, Justin, this is why women didn't complain about sexual harassment in the workforce.
You start causing waves on the boat.
The second you do that, nobody up top wants to deal with that. Mm. You know what? The better thing to do is get rid of Barbara. Give her a little severance, send her on her way, write her a letter of reference and send her across the street to my buddy Dave, and we'll get another girl in here. We don't have to. We don't.
It costs too much trouble. It costs too much trouble.
But the thing is, millennials fight back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's not. And I don't know if we. I can't say that we were. I don't want to say we were cowards. But we were not brought up to fight back.
No, we were institutionalized. We were thoroughly
appreciative of this. This is why many of us creative people, if you got everybody in a room, from the old school hip hop heads and everything, everybody will tell you the same thing. I had to do this in secret because if my parents found out, they were gonna take my turntables away, or they were gonna take my typewriter from me, and this and the other thing. You know, that's not a you want to do what? You want to be a writer? That's not a real job. What you need to do is you need to go to a trade school, learn a trade. You know, you could do that carpenter, you do that carpenter shit. You could do that writing stuff at night, you know, in your off time. You know what the problem with that is? After you'd have been stressed out for 8.5 hours at work,
you ain't got a
coming home to write. You come home to
get no off. You ain't got no off time.
What off time? You know, you go home to drink and just be like, I want nobody messing with me, no nothing. And we were not. We will fight. We're like rats. We will fight if our back is against the wall. Like, but there's only so much we're gonna take before we finally go, you know what, enough is enough.
Absolutely.
But the millennials, I think what with them, it's basically somebody said, here's your job, oh, here are the rules and regs of the job and everything.
And they read that shit.
You know, don't worry, you know, read that on your own time. And they were reading that on their way to and from work.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the boss comes in the office, it's like, I need you. Yeah, I'm on my lunch hour.
Yeah, hold on. And then they cross-referenced it online. And then they cross-referenced it with their other friends online using their smartphones and everything. Because all that information was all going. Yeah.
Homegirl two cubicles over from you was like, girl, listen. Not only are you entitled to a 1 hour lunch, but here's the other thing that they're going to give you. Like, case in point, I answered something somebody put up on Facebook tonight about answering work emails on their weekend. And I said, I don't. Because you know what? The first time my new boss said to me on a Monday morning, I sent an email this weekend. Did you see it? No. So you don't open your emails on the weekend? Be more than happy to. As soon as I do, I'm going to log in for work. And you're going to pay me the weekend rate for opening. No, because that's work. If I'm opening an email, I want to be paid for whatever it is that I'm about to read, because it's going to lead to something else.
Right. Oh, that's like, salary.
We don't pay people on the weekend for that. What? Well, the DOE doesn't pay. But what? They don't pay. Oh, they don't pay. Okay, well then, I guess I won't be reading your emails. It's like, there you go.
You know what, Mark? I do want to be the secretary sitting next to the principal when you do shit like that. Wait, what? What? And I'm just sitting there like this. That nigga's off the chain. That nigga's off the chain.
but you know what, Kurt?
Yeah.
30 years ago, you know what you would be saying?
Oh, what?
You'd have been like, Steven, Mark is about to get fired. You may want to come to the main office. Because then, you don't want to do the job we ask you to do? Okay, not a problem. Monday morning, you come in, somebody else sitting at your desk. You're like, who are you?
Oh, wait.
Yeah, we need to talk to you in here.
Right.
I'm sorry, Mark. Wait. You're mistaken. I would have texted you and said, Mark, yo, they're looking to fire you, bro. Yo, check this, son. I got all the stationery. I got all the stationery from all the classes locked away someplace. Yo, when they bring that shit up to you, son, just tell them you got all the stationery. If they want him back, you're going to have to stay for the job.
My man, check out this fly ass paper, son. I'm saying, see how it's shining? See how it's shining?
Yeah.
Steve, put that down, man. That's part, you know, we're going to use that to get Mark jobs back. So that.
But, shit. But I mean, to Steven's point, you know, we were not raised to fight back. Our parents
were also raised not to fight back.
Made it through that very narrow margin in order to get, because again, I said, until I realized why people coveted these city jobs? Yeah, because we were not entitled to those jobs at one time. Those jobs. Yeah, exactly. That's, you know what? In the mines, that's great. Many people retired under tier one.
Yeah.
They had these great pensions. I mean, half of everybody living in the South now in a big ass house.
Yeah,
is pension. A recipient.
Talk of about the
tier
it.
One.
Yeah.
Retirement plan. Yep. And of
and course, the other half are sitting at the bar in juniors.
And the messed up part is they don't, because you are not in the workforce anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it. How many times do we hear? Well, I mean, you guys work in entertainment. I work for the city. Mm-hmm. How many times have I heard, well, Mark, listen, we want to promote you, but you have to understand, because of the city budget, we can't pay you the supervisor salary. We can give you the position, but because of the budget in the city, but I'm confused. The chancellor is making, so why don't we start cutting other people's budgets who don't do anything in this city? I hear what you're saying.
Good luck with that.
How about this? How about we cut your salary and let it trickle down so that I've been here 15 years and I haven't had a raise or promotion. And it's always, oh, it's the city's fault. Oh, yeah. I'm like, we're the brokest city on the planet.
next to Detroit.
We never have enough to pay the people who work here. But then we're confused when we hear, well, everybody's leaving New York. Yeah, because none of us can afford to live here anymore.
That's
because
right.
as Mayor Bloomberg put it, we got to do, as a city, we got to learn how to do more with less. So we're going to raise the rent and we're going to raise the price of food and transportation, but your salary has to stay the same and you have to figure out how to work with that. Really?
You know what that was? You know what that math. Was? No, that was that too. That was the concession speech in the 50-year war between private industry and government industry. When the Republican Party started defunding, and I'm gonna say that, defunding a lot of the federal jobs, federal agencies, and look at what DeJoyce is doing now. Mm-hmm. Turning into shit and then making an excuse why it should be defunded because it's not working properly. That's what they've been doing that since after Roosevelt bringing the New Deal, since the 40s. That right there is the concession speech to tell everyone that private industry has won out against government agencies. We have lost that war. Whatever happened once upon a time ain't going to be that way now. Your best bet is always to go. If we're going to privatize everything because we don't want to put money into the government overseeing or funding these agencies, fucking UPS and the United States Postal Service. Look, who trusts what? What citizen? What American citizen trusts who more? The United States Postal Service or UPS? Mm. You know what I mean? Who they trust? Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who are they going to trust? I mean, and this is because for so many years, they've been defunding the United States Postal Service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know they're doing that now with schools.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They've been doing that for how long already? Mm-hmm. And I think somebody told me that New York City Transit is a private industry. Is a private corporation. It's overseen by the city,
mm-hmm.
but it's run as a private organization. I
right,
think.
IRT, BMT, yeah.
That's what they want to do to NYCHA.
Yeah,
that's what they want to do to NYCHA. As soon as they get that those contracts in with those private people,
mm-hmm.
folk in this city are not going to see there's not going to be any
privatization
housing no. anymore. Like even with what goes on. People are always barking about, the Barclays Center and all of that. And it was like, we were promised affordable housing. I'm like, well, the affordable housing is based on people's who work for private companies and their paycheck, not the paychecks of those who work for the city. Nope. They don't expect us to be able to afford to live in those places.
Nope.
So
everybody's gonna live like Hershey.
When those lists come out,
there's
always
I've seen them too.
I've seen the list. I've been on the list. I put my name on the list.
Yep.
And there's about 18, 19 affordable housing in my pay bracket. Mm-hmm. But those fly out the window, and the only ones left are the ones in the triple digits.
Yep.
And then guess what? In six figures, and then guess what they tell me? I don't qualify.
Yeah.
Of course I don't qualify. I didn't even put my name for those. Mm-hmm. You know I don't qualify for that. Or the new racket they're pulling is the houses that the apartments we have left, we're not looking for families. We're looking for like newly or intimate, because you don't want longevity in those. In me with a child means once I move in, like
you ain't
like
going nowhere for a while.
I'm buried in there. I ain't moving. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what happened with public housing. Public housing was supposed to be the bridge between you got a city or government job, you had public housing, and the goal was to move out into the suburbs and to become a homeowner at some point. Mm-hmm. But when you started to now undercut people being able to save and use money and buy homes, people stayed where they were.
They are, exactly.
You talk about the projects is an awful place. But the projects isn't an awful place. This is people where they live. Yes, there's bad elements everywhere. Let's call it what it is. I mean, at some point in Chicago, they figured that out with Cabrini Green.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mow it down and then you put up glass,
you know, rises
everywhere. And then you overprice, then you price out the natives. Yeah. And then you say, well, you know, we don't understand why our own people in the city are not. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You guys know that you're not paying the sanitation worker. That's why you got guys that have been in sanitation, you know, or why you go to certain jobs and you see people sitting at desks and they're like, I'm 75. Why are you still here? Why are you still here? Because they're grandfathered into those old tier systems, and they're milking this city for as much as they can.
Sabotage.
When they do retire, even if I am next in line, what they tell me is, oh, we don't have that position anymore. We've dissolved that out and we've broken it up into three different positions, and we're going to give you one of them at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, exactly. At a much lower tier.
Yeah.
Sabotage. Wow, we went weird. We went to a weird place.
We did. We absolutely did go. We were going to just criticize conservatives for their whole trying to make Black history and basically the truth disappear. And to that end, it's like, I think in all fairness, like there is a sort of a big picture goal there. And the big picture is to just keep enough uneducated people that will argue that, you know, this, you know, like this section of the population is getting something for free or getting something they don't deserve or all this other crap basically that isn't true. And it's also, you know, it's also to keep a certain amount of the population devoid of any compassion towards anyone that doesn't look like them. And when that compassion is void, you know, then you have the consistent argument. And then because, you know, you've got Black basketball players and you've got rappers and all these other folks on television that seem to be well-laced and making money, then when we call for certain things, including not being murdered by the police and some kind of, you know, job opportunities outside of menial shit, and just consideration when we actually earn certain degrees, and then that we don't show up in the workplace just to be called a token or an affirmative action bump, you know, like all of that stuff plays into what has plays into the legacy of slavery, plays into the legacy of Jim Crow. It's all relative. It's all pertinent. It's all connected. And if you don't know the history, then you don't appreciate it. You don't understand it. And you keep yourself in this sort of like, you know, willful ignorance, this space of willful ignorance. And I'm going to close it real quick. And you both already know this story. And I think I may have actually told it on the podcast before. I don't know, but it's kind of relevant in the sense that, all right, so I went to South Dakota years ago, and I think you both know this. I went to South Dakota and I was paranoid about being in a red state. So I hired this housewife who had a website. It was talking about how she gives people tours of South Dakota and all this other stuff. Now, granted, when I called this woman, she had no idea what I was talking about, because I wanted to see Indian burial grounds. I wanted to see Wounded Knee, where this horrible massacre had happened. I wanted to see important historical stuff. I didn't want to go whitewater rafting. I didn't mind going to see Mount Rushmore. But, you know, I wanted to see museums. I wanted to see Lakota Sioux.
Yeah.
This woman didn't know anything from anything, but by the time I touched feet in South Dakota, she had a plan worked out where we were going to go see certain things and whatever. And I'm a fan of Western folklore. So, you know, our little trip to Deadwood was great. Mount Rushmore was fine. But when we started putting boots on the ground over by Wounded Knee and specifically Oglala University, where there's actually Lakota Sioux going to college, that's where shit went left for her. Because what ended up happening, we went through a museum exhibit, which basically broke down what the U.S. government did to the Lakota Sioux. And then all these little incidents complete with the smallpox blankets, the herding from one location to the next and everything else like that. It all culminated and landed up into 1890, where these people were basically having what we would basically categorize as a block party.
Yeah.
It got erroneously labeled as an Indian uprising, and the army came in and killed like all these people, including a lot of Sioux leadership, like Red Cloud and some other famous people and so on. And then threw them all in a mass grave. And what was wild was, considering that it was 1890, they actually had footage of the compilation of the mass grave, which I had never seen before. I knew the basic history of this, but to see it all broke down like that was incredible. And it was moving and it was jarring and the whole thing. But here's the thing, the lights come up and this poor little Midwestern white lady who had been just kind of shuttling me around, she actually got up and said, "I need a minute." And she disappeared because she ran out of the building. Yeah. And I was like, okay, after a while I got concerned because it was like, oh, that's my ride. Let me go see what that's all about. And I go out in the parking lot. She's bawling.
Yeah.
Why? Because thanks to the educational system of South Dakota, she knew none of this. Nothing of what she had just learned in those 10 minutes with me, she knew nothing of this. And she's in tears. She's fucking traumatized. So here it is, this woman I barely know. Now I gotta do Sinclair from Living Single, woo-woo-woo, you know, and calm her down just enough so we can get in the car and get on to the next thing. And we broke it down and we talked about it. We talked through it. And it's like, yeah, that shit is true. And she's like, but I have Sioux friends and they never told me this. It's like, well, maybe you should have a conversation. So fast forward, her whole shit has changed. She's left her conservative husband. Wow. She's hired a Lakota Sioux woman to help explain the historical shit in her tours.
Wow.
Whole other thing. We chat every so often. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to front like we besties. Hey, girl. You know, it's like, but we check on each other every once in a while. How you doing? Whatever. And I'm just like, that is the difference between knowing the history of this country and not knowing the history. Because you can affect change. You can be a positive force if you know what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And you won't know if you don't accept the actual fucking layout of what actually got us here.
Exactly.
So, and with that said, let's move on to Boba Fett.
Boba who?
Exactly.
Because the first 5 minutes.
Dude.
For the Mandalorian, there was more violence in the first 5 minutes than there has been in all of
all season. Well, nah.
Graphic violence, more than in the first episode, maybe. Yeah. Let's say that, right? Before that, when Boba Fett got his ship back and blasted the shit out of those bikers in the desert,
yeah,
that was pretty gross.
That's some
Full Metal Jacket shit right there.
It was pretty heavy, but also that wasn't as graphic as dudes getting cut in half with a sword, getting cut in half, clean old Gensu'd up. And to be honest, I owe motherfuckers an apology because I was the one talking about, well, you know, it's Disney. They're not going to. That was me. I totally own that. That was me. I was like, man, those motherfuckers ain't going to put up no real violence.
I had to pause and make sure I was watching the right show.
I know. But
for a minute, I was like, wait, did I click on the wrong episode? Is this, what in the hell just happened?
Did Boba Fett just go to Ozark? What happened?
Did the Mandalorian just kill Tom and Jerry's, like, nemesis? Yo, them dog faces? Like,
Spike.
Kill them Spikes. He's little Spike's daddy.
Whole family. Oh, my God.
But you know, you gotta love what I love about it is that he walks out and he's like, there's some money in there that don't belong to me. That's it.
Yeah.
If y'all would just see your way
settled
to let me pass, whatever's in there
that
is yours. And my man was like, he's like, hey.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I have no idea who you are. We never saw you. I'm going to go here, get my change, and I'm leaving.
I'm sad to say, I'm sorry. I'm sad to say, I do not feel any Jedi would do that shit. I feel a Jedi would fight their way out as opposed to like, hey, there's some cash up in there that don't belong to me. I just here for the head. Y'all can have it if y'all want. I just want to leave.
About that, because that's kind of what Luke tried to do.
Luke tried
initially
to,
when he was getting Han and Chewbacca back.
Oh yeah,
he did up there and he said, "Look,
would Qui-Gon Jinn do that?"
Nah, I think Qui-Gon Jinn stabbed. Qui-Gon
would have dropped the house on somebody.
Exactly. He'd pulled a full on Wizard of Oz on a nigga.
Qui-Gon would have been like. Wait just a second. And you'd have been sitting there like, why is everything trembling? Bam! Like I was saying, I came for the...
right.
Man.
but keep it 100. While Qui-Gon had his issues, you know, I think pretty much like Obi-Wan would have tried to be smooth about it. Yeah. Actually, if I had to be completely honest, Obi-Wan... My take on Obi-Wan, and I'm looking forward to his series too. My take on Obi-Wan is like a repressed cat burglar. Because that motherfucker, he likes sneaking around. He don't want to talk. He just kind of like tiptoes. And unless you Darth Vader, you don't even know he's in the building.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Good point.
That motherfucker, you know what? And then it's dark.
Obi-Wan, because you remember the very first time we ever meet Obi-Wan, he's like, hey, look, this kid, don't worry about him. Let me get you a drink. dude hauled off, pull a gun on him and lost his arm in 2 seconds. It was like, wait, what just happened? And yeah. Obi-Wan's like, all right, so like I was saying, I'm gonna give you a minute. Cause even the dude said, you seem like a level-headed guy. Why don't we talk about, you know, and he's like, right. You either come with me warm or you come cold. With me cold.
It's like, right. You either come with me as a fajita or you come with me as a slushy.
That's fucked up.
One of those two.
But that's real.
But you know, I'm really curious to see. First of all, I want to see this chainmail that he got made for Grogu, because that's what it was. I mean, he made him a mithril shirt.
He didn't make him a medallion or some shit like that.
No, I think it's
a you're shirt. Right. You're right. No, no. Yeah.
He made him a medallion, Kirk, so he could wear that shit on the cover of his mixtape. Yeah.
Same.
Great Grogu, idea.
Wait, you know Grogu got some fucking skills. Knock it off, Steve. You know that shit is real.
He has green vomit. I'd say that's a skill.
I bet his bars is better than Lil Wayne.
Ooh. They might be, but I wouldn't say that shit in New Orleans.
I will tell you there's something I wasn't curious about.
Right.
Didn't really need to know this information. That Jawas are hairy.
Oh, fuck.
Didn't need to know that.
Did not know that, though. You know, you're right. You're right.
I didn't know that. We just still don't know what the sand people look like. So I definitely didn't need that little piece of information.
I'm guessing they're ashy.
Sand people were ashy. Jawas are hairy.
I'm guessing if you rolled up on the Tusken Raiders with some Jergens, you'd be a rich motherfucker. That's what I'm thinking.
You know what? You don't. What the hell, man?
Be a rich cat. And oil of Olay, man, they probably make you president.
It's done. Cocoa butter? You a god. You a god.
Exactly.
Shea butter.
They be worshiping you like the Ewoks with C-3PO.
That wasn't good.
But here's the thing. Mm. And hopefully this is not a missed opportunity. Mm. If she dated a Jawa.
Oh, shit.
I am praying that Jawa does speak English. And we're going to run into him at some point, like talking Jawani or whatever he speaks. Yeah. And somebody's like, look, I'm not dealing with you. All right, look, man, here's the deal. Oh, shit. You're going to pay me for these parts. There's going to be a serious problem. On you know what?
Give it a week. Give it a week. That nigga got an OnlyFans page.
And you know what's messed up? That's actually where I thought Mark was going. I thought Mark was getting ready to say, because we're creatives. What? I thought you were like, you know, be wild if there's a sex tape.
Sex tape. Yep. Like, OnlyFans, sex tape. Ciao. Down with the fur.
Could you imagine?
Nasty.
I want to know who this Jawa is, because that means he's probably all over the place with folk.
Probably the Max Julian of Jawas.
he got a Huttonese girlfriend.
I don't give a fuck about you. Get out there and get my money.
He got a Guido girlfriend.
Right. Marissa Tomei looking chick, you know.
Nasty.
My biological clock is ticking like this. Oh.
He getting across the galaxy all over the place.
We'll say real quick on the offside though.
I've got holes with different.
He's the one that's
not like, area you know, codes.
Not area know. Codes.
You know, I'm frank and earnest with women. I'm frank on Tatooine and earnest on Cal Curtin.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that ladies awesome. And gentlemen, is an ad lib from The Long Kiss Good night. If you That'd have awesome. Never seen that movie,
you need to see that.
You really do need to see that, because that's Gina Davis and Sam Jackson at their most action-packed hilarious.
Oh, God.
So there's our recommendation for the night. If you haven't, you know,
I will say for that. I will say I enjoy the lore on the black lightsaber.
Mm.
That sure. it was getting heavy for him, like he was having trouble carrying it.
So yeah,
like,
that's kind of rough. New.
Yeah,
that's kind of rough. That almost calls for a lesson from Moff Gideon.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what's going to happen.
Right. Or yeah,
that's what's going to happen. Well, right. I don't know. Luke may not even know. Gideon.
Well, the thing is,
that was rocking it.
Yeah.
And rocking it well, rocking it without a problem. So,
but you know what might be interesting, because its history is grounded in the fact that the Mandalorian who made it was a Jedi. I'm thinking that when he goes to see Grogu,
yeah,
Luke will train him. And right. if it's not Luke.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, are we really CGI-ing right. the fuck out of Mark Hamill for then like a whole no. episode?
If it's not Luke, then there's only one other person that could do it.
What's her name?
KRS-One? No, sorry.
Rosario Dawson's character? Was it Boca?
It could be
Ahsoka Tano. Yeah.
Or could be Leia. Because remember, this particular period in time,
Leia's still alive.
Leia is still, this is right after Return of the Jedi. Luke trained her.
Right.
She just never completely carried the mantle. But we don't know about that time period. Like, now that we're getting out of the canon of right. what's going on,
because I wonder, because the whole black lightsaber, the black blade thing, alludes a lot to, you know, the cursed ebony blade of the Black Knight, and the cursed sword of Stormbringer of Elric of Melnibone. So the idea could be actually that there's a sense of malice and anger and violence that needs to channel through the blade for it to be carried. And he doesn't have that. Moff Gideon was a fucked up dude from yeah. jump. Mm-hmm. And Jyn Darn is not fucked up like him. That could say something about what the ebony, the legacy of the ebony being, that of harnessing dark forces or harnessing a dark emotion to actually being able to wield it.
So you're saying your theory here is that a nice guy can't handle the dark saber.
Exactly.
Mm.
And that's why it's cursed. And that's why it's cursed.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, because I mean that is an odd, you know, you have a Mandalorian Jedi,
yeah.
and that I mean, you're serving two masters, seriously, because your code as a Mandalorian and the code as a Jedi are two different, you know,
right. they're well, he's not really yeah.
in sync with each other. Even
well, he's not a sect. He's not part of that sect anymore either. That Mandalorian no. sect as well.
No.
Spoilers alert. I'm sorry, guys.
But even still.
Oh, now we want to do spoiler alerts?
and even it's still.
We did everything except put on helmets and act out the episode. Like, what are you talking about?
Shit, nigga, I'm high, man. Stop.
But.
Well, you can still be high and consistent.
Uh-oh.
No. What kind of drugs you taking?
You can be consistently high.
I've just had a tequila. That's all. Hey,
ain't you see Rick James? Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Ain't nobody on this line did no cocaine. Stop playing.
No, I didn't, but I'm just saying he's not. Yeah, drugs don't make you consistent. Just drugs just make you high.
Ghetto life. Anyway.
Sorry, Mark. You were saying.
What I want to know, though. So this is going to be a very, very interesting season finale.
Yes.
Because you got an angry Wookiee. You got a Mandalorian that don't give a shit.
Angry Wookiee. You got like
you
got a black Wookiee.
Those two alone are a problem for like, because whatever meeting he's about to have, whatever Pikes. Meeting he's about to have is yeah. about to get lit because yeah. you got two guys on the map that are known just
to not give two fucks.
They don't care.
Nope.
And the biggest point is the Mandalorian was like, it's on the house. Need to be paid for this. I'm a go, and when I get back,
yeah, I got some shit I need to get off my chest.
And God forbid,
yeah,
he comes back, and whoever's with Luke is like, you know what? I'm going with him. I like him, so I'm gonna go with the Mandalorian. And
no, decide. Yeah.
Because I mean, it's not.
I'm gonna see if this lightsaber work real quick. I'll be right back. Yeah,
because I'm not saying it's gonna be Grogu, but it's always you never know. He might his own
pick up somebody presence, on the way. Yeah,
his own presence among a bunch of Jedi's or someone who's conflicted.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, I don't consider myself a Sith, but this guy, I think I can learn a lot more from him than what Luke is teaching me. You know, we don't know. I mean, for what the plan is, but I'm looking forward to seeing
the Wild Bunch, Star Wars Wild Bunch.
Because even what's even more messed up when I think about it,
yeah,
the way he left that last meeting was basically like, "You're just not going to turn on me." Now he didn't say what he's going to do to them. He's right. just like, "No, I understand how y'all think, but because again, the whole idea is like." He's like, I'm going to rule with respect.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. You got them kids from the street.
Yep.
You got them urchins that he got working for him.
Yep.
He got the Wookiee, and now you got the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So God only knows
That's a
what
squad.
They might do if they, and you got a Rancor in the basement.
I'm excited.
And Danny Trejo.
You got Danny Trejo. And you possibly have some sand people out there that are part of your.
They'll be down for some roughneck shit.
So.
And you have Fennec.
So anybody who's been complaining right now.
That's a squad.
About the Boba Fett series.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Let this one sit and think about all the people he's coming together with.
Yeah.
And. It only, you know what it reminds me of? I know Kirk saw this. Do you remember the NBC The Odyssey?
Yes.
With Juan DeSante?
Yes.
And when he came back and his son was just standing there like,
stop!
And they closed the door. And his son was like, I'm just waiting. He strung the bow and he said to his son, now, my man
damn, Mark, I don't know why you bring this shit up, man. Yeah, man, because, dude, all right, there's two movies that I know that did the Odyssey. The one was Ulysses with Kirk Douglas back in 68. And then there was the one, Armando Santi, the Odyssey. And the climax is always that scene, the climactic scene where Odysseus slaughters all the suitors in his palace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one with he's talking about Armando Santi is iconic because, like he said, he strung the bow up and homeboy's servants close that door. And then he sits in his throne and he tells his son, now's the time. And his son takes up like two spears and just chucks that shit.
Mm.
And they go crazy. They go berserk. They go like madcap in that place. But Kirk Douglas won back in the 68.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When Odysseus strings the bow there's this crack of thunder. The thunder, like the gods, like he is here. And he takes the bow and, you know, he's shooting people. His son is stabbing motherfuckers. People are running around crazy. And I mean, it got so violent. You know, the trick is you string the bow and you shoot it through the axe heads, the holes of the axe heads. He's fighting this one cat. This cat goes, you know, tries to knife him from the back. He ducks it. Knife goes, and you know, that guy misses, obviously, and he takes Odysseus takes one of the axe heads, pulls it out of the post, and just buries it in the dude. I'm like, whoa, 1968.
Well, they're assuming you had a babysitter
and if they do some type of shit like at the season finale of Book of Bobo, and that BBW is gonna be tearing arms off, you're gonna see Din Djarin like shooting the missiles out of his wrist. It's gonna be, man, I'm excited.
Frank and Ernest show up.
Frank and Ernest show up.
Frank and Ernest.
Jawa start filming that shit for their OnlyFans page.
And
it's gonna be that cap.
Folks, so yeah, we had a little we were very serious at the very beginning of this episode. We were. Took a laugh. Real quick, because we're past an hour now, and I didn't mean to go that far, but we should probably take this minute since we're already past an hour. We're going to recognize some sad news over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We had some rest in peace. I don't know, Grim Reaper's got a new intern or something's happening because let's see. So let's go over the list. We lost Meatloaf at age 74. We lost Howard Hessman, who used to be Dr.
Johnny Fever. The one and only Johnny Fever.
WKRP in Cincinnati, and he was also, he had a sitcom after that, actually.
Head of the Class.
Head of the class, that's right.
Robin Givens, yeah.
Exactly. We lost Louis Anderson, he was 63. We lost to suicide, unfortunately. We lost Regina King's son, Ian Alexander, at the tender age of 26. Miss USA 2019, Chelsea Christ, also suicide at the age of 30.
Yeah.
Very sad. 2022 is looking to be a rough year. So best thing I guess I can say here is, you know, take care of your loved ones.
Listen to them.
That's right. Hold tight.
Yeah, man.
So, ladies and gentlemen, highs and lows and highs. This is Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. We are signing out. We will do some more of this next week, and we might have a special guest, and that'll lighten the mood, you know, when we do stuff like this. For Mark Abbott, Kirk Johnson, and myself, we bid you a fond adieu. And please vote properly so that as our books get out there, we don't end up banned in the USA now. Banned in the USA now.